Welcome to the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If your job involves working with or influencing people's behavior, this podcast offers invaluable insights into what makes people tick. Through personal interviews that are thoughtful and surprising, we explore the full range of the roots to people smarts that can help you make or break your own career. My name is Marie Gervais, and with a PhD in culture and learning in the workplace and my own cultural journey, I bring the mysteries of human beings at work around the world to you. Through conversations with very diverse people, examining the groups they were born into and the ones they chose to belong to, my podcast takes a deep dive into why people do what they do and how they belong. Hone your skills to manage others and to be a better human being at work with the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections podcast listeners. Today, I have a most exciting guest to introduce to you. Her name is Rhonda Moret. She's the founder and CEO of Elevated Diversity. She is recognized as a trailblazing figure and thought leader in diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as in health equity. Rhonda has dedicated over a decade to helping organizations advance their diversity and inclusion mission and objectives. As a first-generation college graduate, Rhonda began her career working at a multicultural ad agency on several accounts targeting traditionally marginalized populations. From those experiences and her own, she built a 20-plus-year career as a communication strategist for some of the world's most recognized brands, including Universal, Nike Golf, and the PGA Tour, creating campaigns rooted in the promotion of equity and inclusion. In her role, however, she was consistently the only woman and often the only person of color, and navigating the environment proved challenging and disheartening. Motivated by the situation she faced, Rhonda founded Elevated Diversity in 2017 with a mission to help organizations embed the key tenets, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, into their cultures in actionable, sustainable, and financially impactful ways. And due to its innovative, customized approach, the company's clients include Berkeley Symphony, Boston Beer, and Homeland Security, among others. Welcome, Rhonda.
Hello. Thank you so much.
I'm really glad that you could make the time to be on the podcast, and I'm sure the listeners will learn a lot from you.
Well, I hope so. And I've definitely enjoyed listening to your podcast, so I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Awesome. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. Please tell the audience a little bit personally about who you are, since the bio is mostly professional, but something about, you know, where you were born and your family.
Absolutely. So yes, I'm actually a native of Los Angeles. So I grew up in Los Angeles, went to college in Arizona, and have lived since that point, lived in different parts of the country, including Florida. And now we're living in San Diego. And probably my greatest joy are my kids. So I have three kids who are all grown, but definitely that's always been my number one job and my number one passion over the years, is playing a role in raising these three incredible humans.
It's such an important task. And it affects everything that happens in the next generation. So it's very significant to be dedicated to the education of children, for sure.
Yeah. And with education, that's always been an area of focus for me. I think you noted in the bio that I'm a first generation college graduate, and that's something I'm very proud of. And for me, just being able to secure that bachelor's, and then I went on to secure a master's as well, but being able to be the first in my family to achieve or reach that goal, and then being able to uplift my kids and provide them with an opportunity to pursue their educational objectives has just been something that I'm incredibly proud of.
Mm-hmm. And rightly so. You were mentioning before we started the interview that your background is from Louisiana, which is a most interesting mix of peoples, and where you had the French, the Scottish, and different African nations all mixing together, and it produced some dynamics that you think have affected you today.
Absolutely. Well, I am Creole, so my family goes back hundreds and hundreds of years to Louisiana, whether it's in New Orleans or some of the outlying cities there. But as we were talking, it's interesting that I find myself in this type of work today being focused on the importance and also the value and the strength that diversity brings to the workplace. I feel like there's been tremendous value that level of diversity has brought to my own life personally, just based on my ancestors and the story of our people. So yeah, diversity has always been front and center in my life and my upbringing. So again, it's interesting that, you know, my path has led me to where it is today.
Mm-hmm. For the listeners, I was speaking with Rhonda a little bit before we started, and I told her that I went to New Orleans about 3 years ago, and I was so struck on the history tour by example after example of strong women, women of color arising to take over really in industries where you did not see that at that time. And you saw a mixing of cultures that Rhonda, actually you described that as being ahead of the time. You want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I think just as you noted, if you do a bit of research on that time period in New Orleans and Louisiana, there was a lot of race mixing and there was a lot of cultures that were intermingled. And that's evident by whether it's the music or the food. Everyone always talks about, oh my gosh, I went to Louisiana and had the most incredible food. Well, that incredible food is based on some of it has Spanish influences, some of it's French influences, others is African influences. So we just see that mixing of those different perspectives and those influences, and the outcome is beautiful. I think there's some stories or lessons to be learned there, just if we look at it, even just from again, the music or from the food or just the culture in and of itself.
Yeah. And interestingly, that the Creole population was at the top of the heap. So from the hierarchical perspective, it was the Creoles that controlled the economy, which I think is brilliant. They maybe saw that in a couple of other places in the world. So it's a testament to the strength of mixing people up, right?
I think so. I think I have a pretty cool background. And if there's an opportunity to talk about where I'm from and my background and my experiences, I definitely enjoy that opportunity to share.
Awesome. Well, then that leads me to my next question, which is, are there some incidents from your childhood that stand out as being formative that you could share with the audience?
Yeah, I think there's not just one. And it's kind of interesting because, as I shared earlier, diversity and just who we were in our racial makeup has always been front and center. But part of the work that we do in working with organizations and working with people in these organizations, we spend some time asking about their personal backgrounds and how they were raised and some of their viewpoints, whether it's on diversity from a racial perspective or gender or any other of the diversity dimensions. But often we'll hear that people will say, I hadn't really thought about race until this age or that age. Something happened in their life and it was their first experience really thinking about who they were from a racial perspective. And I always just find that interesting because, again, it's something that is omnipresent, even in my childhood, but also today. As a person of color, you don't really ever forget that you are a person of color. Yeah. However, if you're part of that dominant culture, it's very rare. I shouldn't say that. Often it can be rare that your racial makeup or background comes into play. And I have this conversation, whether it's with friends or my spouse, even where he, as a member of a dominant culture, he doesn't think about it, whereas I think about it all the time. So it's just an interesting perspective, interesting example of how we can have very different perspectives, again, based on
our racial experience. So, but I'm really interested in specific incidents that you can bring to mind that have to do with your childhood.
Well, with my childhood, one of the things that I can say is that with that, how I was raised, I knew that I had to work harder and I knew that I had to perform at a higher level because I was that other. So I didn't fit into the traditional category of who's successful, who went to the best schools, or who got the prize jobs. I knew that I had to really prove myself.
You were conscious of that, but can you say something that starts with, I remember a time?
Not really.
So there are times in childhood when, you know, you might have a family memory, you might have a school memory. It doesn't have to be related to the job that you're doing now, but something that stands out in your mind. So, you know, I have lots of memories from my childhood. I remember sitting under a tree that I thought was so large when I was 5 years old. And then when I came back as a teenager, it was a small tree. And I thought this was such a big tree when I was a child. That's when I started to think about perspective, about how when you get older, maybe you see things differently. And then, you know, traveling to different states, you must have had an experience where you noticed things being different. You just start to have some experiences. People talk about, you know, a clash they might have had in adolescence or when they were in college or high school, when they joined some club and all of a sudden they had a new insight. So from your childhood, your adolescence and your young adulthood, there must be some memories of stories that you can speak to.
Well, I guess one that I could share from an adolescent's perspective is that I grew up in an environment where all of our friends and my parents' friends and my parents' parents' friends were all from the same background. So we're all Creole families, Creole kids. And, you know, we kind of took comfort in having that really tight-knit community that was kind of unique to ourselves. And then we moved out of that particular environment, moved to another state. And that was one of the times that I felt like, whoa, not only am I visually different from these other individuals that I'm now going to school with and now trying to become friends with, but I just had a different perspective and a different viewpoint than the kids in our new living environment. So I think that was my first awakening that, oh, there are different viewpoints and different ways to living your life and different upbringings. What was important to my parents and in terms of how they raised us wasn't necessarily the case across the board. So I think that gave me some insights that, you know, many of our experiences as children are definitely a direct response or direct relation to how we were raised in our parents' experiences and our parents' parents' experiences.
Mm-hmm. So you're born into different groups. You don't choose to be born in a certain group. So you're talking about the Creole culture. There may also have been a religious or a language influence. There may have been a geographical influence because people who grew up in mountains and people who grew up in deltas and on islands all have something different that's specific to the geography that they were born into. And then there's social class, right? So social class also very much influences how we start to see the world at a young age. So from the groups that you were born into, what stands out as being significant to you now?
I think with social class is something that I feel is significant because we definitely did not have a lot of money growing up. That's when I realized that work ethic that I needed to be able to move beyond. It's interesting, even when I was a kid, I remember my mom repeatedly sharing with me that, Rhonda, you are never satisfied. It doesn't matter what you have, you are never satisfied. And it's so true. Even, you know, however many years moving forward, I've always felt like, okay, what's next? You know, what's that next level that I'm reaching for? So I think that social class, what I grew up around, that mindset of this isn't enough. I knew I was within a class or a group that I needed to find a way up and out.
Mm-hmm. Any other influences from the groups you were born into?
Well, I think with in terms of religion, again, going back to my background as a Creole person, many Creole people, or probably the majority, are Catholic. And that for us and in our family has always been a big part of who we are, ranging from you're going to Catholic school, and I went to a Catholic summer camp, and everyone's buried in Catholic cemeteries. So it's a very prominent part of our life. And it's kind of interesting today, based on the fact of, even with some of my childhood friends, religion, just like everyone else, it's evolved and its importance in one's life has shifted. But at the time, definitely there was a huge sense of identity, you know, with the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. So what has shifted and what stayed the same?
For me, I just think that it's part of who I am. Now, that doesn't mean I necessarily go to church every Sunday and feel like I have to follow all of the teachings of the church like perhaps my grandparents did, but it's definitely a part of who I am and part of my identity.
Mm-hmm. So from the groups that you chose to belong to as an adult, you grew up and you went into marketing and multicultural ad agencies. And when you're in college, that would have also been a group that you chose to be in. You learned something about that that's influenced your development as a leader and your sense of yourself culturally. And then probably with the companies that you worked with as well. And there may have been hobbies. Maybe you learned another language. Maybe you lived in another place outside of the U.S. So have any of those things developed? To give you an idea, one of the people that I interviewed on the podcast surprised me by saying, because he was not, this was not a profession that I thought he would say this, but he surprised me by saying that he had become very active in helping to save small feral bee populations. Because the diversity in bee populations is really important for sustaining life on the planet. And when people find these feral bees in their doorbells and their power boxes, they just kill them. And then that's a real problem. So he had become immersed in the save the bees culture, which was a very interesting discussion. Not that that's you, but I'm saying that just to show when people grow into other things, they learn about other groups and that becomes part of their sense of culture. So how about you? What's that been like for you?
I think one of the things that I gravitated toward over the years, and again, this is based on my upbringing, but I've always been drawn to opportunities and causes to help support women and helping women find greater opportunities. Because as we know, there's pay disparity or lack of opportunities, but finding ways to help women, helping those that have children and haven't been able to realize some of the opportunities has been something that I've worked toward, whether it's through nonprofit groups or some of our own events and causes that we've pulled together to help women.
And has anything in your own practice and habits changed as a result of working with these other women?
Sure. I mean, I think just like everything else in life, you learn from others, you learn from those experiences, and you learn a bit more about yourself. I mean, I think as I was able to develop professionally and grow my business, I still had remembered that where I came from and being able to continue that tie back to where I started and find ways to help other individuals grow and find new opportunities. I think, I don't know if it's changed me. It's just kind of solidified who I feel like I've always been.
Maybe more conscious of who you are and where you come from.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you never want to forget. And you also want to be able to find a way to give back. You know, I think there's always something to be said about, you know, phrases like empowered women, empower women. So finding ways to support other women, being true to my beginnings and where I started, and finding ways to support other women.
Mm-hmm. So what about, as you know, personality and temperament perspective? So I define temperament as being what you're born with. So you said your mother said you're never satisfied as that's a temperament trait. There may be other temperament traits too, you know, for example, curiosity, or some kids are more introverted, some are more extroverted. They're, you know, what kinds of things seem to come naturally to you? And then later, what did you build onto through either overcoming obstacles and taking advantage of various opportunities?
Yeah, I think you noted curiosity. And I definitely think that's been one of the traits that I have, and I definitely see it in my kids as well. But having that curiosity, I was that kid And this is back in the day when parents would buy their children encyclopedias. And I remember we had two different sets of encyclopedias, which I applaud my parents that they decided to make that investment. But I remember vividly my brother and I just grabbing any letter and sitting for many hours, just thumbing through and learning very random facts and concepts. And I just think that's one of those gifts is when a child is either naturally curious or if that parent can spawn curiosity in their children, because we know that's a trait and a temperament that's going to be so incredibly valuable in, you know, so many aspects of one's life, that definitely I feel like that curiosity has served me well on a professional level as well as on a personal level.
Mm-hmm. I also have that memory of sitting with my sister and brother and paging through the Encyclopedia Britannica. And the ones that we kept coming back to were the ones that had overlays. So there were two overlays. One was the human body and all of the functioning systems in the human body. And the other one was the planet. So from the, you know, the oceans and the ocean life, and then moving up into, you know, birds at the top. Like it just, so you'd stick one overlay and another overlay. And then we'd say, which one did we miss? And it was like talking about how those were the ones that we kept coming back to. But it's funny, you're the first person I've spoken to who has that same encyclopedia memory.
But isn't it a wonderful one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very good. Yeah, we enjoyed it a lot. That's something that the current generation will never experience.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. I mean, it really, really is unfortunate with how prevalent social media is today. Like I said, it was just my brother and I looking through these encyclopedias, just spending that one-to-one time with a sibling was also meaningful.
So. Yes, yes, for sure. So personality would have been what you grew into, that you might have added pieces to your personality. You know, for example, I was very impatient. I became much more patient after having children. And it's gone on from there. It's constantly, though, something I have to work on, because patience doesn't come naturally to me. I have to think it through. Would patience be appropriate here? Maybe it would. So it's something I have worked to add on to my personality traits. How about you? What have you added on?
It's definitely not patience, because I've always been incredibly impatient and it's something I continue to struggle with today. But I think for me, I was born in the 60s and I was raised in a very traditional way. So, you know, I did the dance class and I used to get what was called the Good Conduct Award, where my brother would always get the honor roll award. I would get the good conduct, which meant I was always kind in class and I didn't speak out of turn. So I kind of grew up in a way where it was somewhat expected that a young lady would grow up, especially someone who has roots from the South, right? But today, I can be very outspoken. And actually, sometimes I have to rein myself in terms of how I respond to different situations or to different conversations. And I'm not sure if that's, you know, just me as I get older. We were talking about as you age, you become so much more comfortable and confident in your own skin. So I think that might be part of it, or it might be a part of, hey, this is really who you were meant to be. But within your upbringing, you were taught to these other, you know, traditional conventions, but that really wasn't who you were. So as I've matured and, you know, lived these various lived experiences, now I kind of feel like, yeah, this is who I am. And if I have something to say, I'll say it. And if not everybody likes what I have to say, that's okay. That is part of the human experience. But I think that has allowed me to be a bit truer to who I am as a person.
Mm. And more responsive to others?
Yeah, I think so. But I think when I say that, it's more being more responsive to myself, you know, mm-hmm. instead of saying, oh, I don't want to say that. I don't want to hurt their feelings, or I don't want to appear to be difficult. All of those things that, again, I think is a big part of how many women have been raised.
Socialized to smile and be nice. But sometimes being responsive to others comes more easily when we feel more comfortable within ourselves, because it's easier to see what the other person needs. And perhaps at that point, the person needs to be challenged.
Hmm.
And perhaps that person needs tact or safety. So if I'm so caught up in, you know, me that I can't see what the other person needs, I'm going to respond out of the way I've been socially conditioned.
Right.
But if I have self-awareness, then I'm going to be curious about what the other person is experiencing.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at that. And I think I do have to agree.
What about a moment of cultural dissonance? So you come somewhere and you go, whoa, this is not the way everybody does things. I thought that was the way the whole world did things. And if you've lived in different places, even going from one street to the next or one classroom to the next can be a moment of cultural dissonance. But you just suddenly surprised by an awareness that the way you do things is not the way everybody does things.
Yeah, I think that's definitely goes back to my childhood attending a Catholic school. In addition to having our faith be a big part of the day, whether it's starting the day with prayer or our family moved out of state and I ended up going to a public school. And that was shocking on many different levels. And one of the levels being is just, I felt the level of respect that was expected from the students to those in roles of authority simply wasn't there. So one example is at the Catholic school, if one of the nuns walked into the classroom, immediately all students would stand up and say, "Good morning, Sister Jean Therese." And that was just a practice. Then I went to a public school and there was nothing like that. I mean, there was no level of respect in terms of, you know, whether it was a new teacher that came in. I just felt like there was a very casual relationship between students and those in roles of authority. And I just found that somewhat surprising. And I found it a little disheartening, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. I grew up Catholic and became a member of the Baha'i faith many years ago. And our children were raised as Baha'is, which has also a strong Muslim influence in it. So our oldest and youngest child went to Catholic school and the two middle ones went to public school. And in between, there were switches, dependent on where we were living and whatnot. So the youngest daughter went in high school to a Catholic school and she had exactly the opposite experience as what you were talking about just now. And it just reminded me of that when you were meshing it. So there was Ash Wednesday and her friends said to her, "Ash Wednesday is coming up." And she said, "Well, what's that?" And they said, "Well, you know, people are going to put purple or black shrouds over the statues and everybody's going to think about crucifixion coming up and they're going to be sad about it and they'll darken the lights in the hallways and then they're going to go into the gym and then the priest is going to come. He's going to anoint everybody's forehead with oil and ashes." And my daughter burst out laughing and she said, "How stupid do you think I am? Do you think I would believe that people actually do this? What is that? Some kind of a medieval rite?" And she's like, she had this whole meltdown with her friends in the hallway and one of them looked at her and said, "You'll see." So then the next day she comes to school and that's exactly what happened. And she was like into shock the whole day. And she came home and she said, "You'll never believe what they do in a Catholic school." It was so fun because it was like the complete polar opposite to what I'd experienced. And then she said, "Next time my friends tell me something that Catholics do, I'm going to listen and ask questions instead of telling them that it's crazy." And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I can only imagine because there are obviously so many traditions, whether it's the Catholic faith or others, those traditions, if you are not aware of what's going on and it's something brand new, I can imagine where some of this would be somewhat difficult to understand the why or the purpose and the intent there.
But it's interesting because at the end of her high school, because it was obligatory to take the catechism classes, and she wrote an essay about Catholicism that won the prize.
Oh.
Because she had some shocking experiences and then she started asking questions and she ended up researching it and paying attention. And I think that's what cultural dissonance often does to us. We might be shocked at first, but then afterwards we go, "Wait a minute, what could I learn from this experience? What don't I know?"
And which is a beautiful thing. But I think where often we fall short is we don't take the time out to do the research and ask the questions. And if that was an area that we would spend more time asking those questions and just having that thirst to understand the whys, I think we would be so much better off in so many different situations.
Mm-hmm. But coming back to what you said about the experience of somebody in authority walking into the classroom and all the children standing up and certain formalities of respect, I think that that's something we could easily bring back because it seems to be missing when people talk about lack of civility and courtesy in the workplace. It's perhaps because they didn't learn as children to show respect. It was more like everybody was on the same equal playing field. And I don't know, what do you think about that?
I think that is such an interesting comment because we just had this conversation internally yesterday about civility and what that means and how it could impact the workplace. I think many organizations and many work teams struggle because we have gotten so far away from what that concept and that action could mean in a work team or a workplace and environment. I think it's an area that from the type of work that we do and the type of trainings and education programs that we are developing, we're putting an emphasis back on civility. I really love the fact that you bring that up because I think it's definitely missing in many situations.
Mm-hmm. And like you, I felt moving from a small Catholic environment into a public sphere as an adolescent, the lack of respect really disrupted me. And it's not that everybody should automatically be respected if they're telling kids to do things that are wrong or abusing them. But there's a station of respect, and then there's also this respect that you've earned. And if you've never learned to respect people for the station, that they can be respect because they're the postman or the respect because they're the clerk serving you in the store, their station is deserving of respect. If you've never learned to respect at that level, it may be harder to do the next part where you can wait for the respect that's earned.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And we all know with the Catholic Church and all the issues there that have taken place and that are just horrific. But whether it's within Catholic school classroom or even if it's within, say, a YMCA after school program, is there an opportunity to begin really reinforcing what respect really is and why it's valuable and start teaching those lessons that I feel like we've gotten away from in many cases just over the years. And I think just watching the news this morning, there's so many things that are just so incredibly troubling as it pertains to how people interact with each other. And so much of it is just that we're just not willing to ask questions. We're not willing to give others that level of respect to share their thoughts, their vantage points. I do think there's some opportunities for growth there if we're willing to realize, okay, I do need to take a step back and I do need to, listen to others versus just shutting down these ideas because they don't necessarily mesh with our own.
Just taking a moment to acknowledge in your own being that this is another human being.
Yes, another human being. And it doesn't matter what shape they're in, what color they are, what life choices they have. They're another human being. We've had such division over the years in our country, and so much of it is going back to that we don't respect each other or we don't respect others that may not have a similar background or similar life experience to our own.
Yeah. Well, getting close to the end of the interview, and I'm wondering what you would like to promote. What would you like the podcast listeners to know about?
Well, much of our work, and I think you read it in the bio, is just based on helping organizations create these workplace environments where people feel like, okay, I'm part of this conversation. I'm seen, I'm valued, and creating a culture of inclusion and belonging. So that's what our organization is all about. That's the work that we do each and every day. So I definitely encourage your listeners, if they are looking for opportunities to address some of those issues or create a culture where respect is valued, to take a look at our website. It's elevateddiversity.com. do a lot of work with organizations, work with leaders, and we really get back to some of the soft skills and some of the fundamentals of being good coworkers to those that are on your team, being good leaders to those who are on your team. So much of this just comes back to the individual person and how can we work together? How can we collaborate? How can we be better partners to those that we work alongside day in, day out? It's important work. And I feel that I'm definitely honored to be able to do this type of work because it is very, very important to me. And I see the value of what we do each and every day.
I just wanted to repeat, the website is Elevated Diversity. So it's Elevate with a D before this, so it's like right. Two Ds, which I'm mentioning because when I was looking for it the first time, I thought, what? How come this is not bringing up the right website? And then I went, oh, right, I'm missing the D, ElevatedDiversity.com. Good place to go looking. So is there anything else you would like to say before we end today?
No, but I've enjoyed our conversation. I think more people should have these types of conversations because I think so much of who we are today and how we present ourselves to the world is based on all of these situations and occurrences that we have lived through. It creates who we are today. I've enjoyed our conversation. I enjoy the questions that you've asked because it really did make me stop and consider different aspects of my life and how I've ended up to be where I am today. So thank you.
Well, it's a mutual pleasure. Thank you so much, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Coming from a working-class Louisiana Creole heritage, but living in different states throughout her life, Rhonda rose from what many would consider a disadvantaged background to be the first person in her extended family to graduate from college. After working in the marketing and communications world for 20-plus years, Rhonda now heads the organization Elevated Diversity. I enjoyed her recounting of experiences, reading and discussing encyclopedias with her brother as children, and the contrasting levels of respect for authority she saw when moving from a Catholic school environment to a public school. Here are some of my takeaways from our conversation. One, a family's sense of identity is separate from the dominant culture endures throughout adulthood. Two, our dimensions of diversity are rich and varied. Different aspects come more or less to the fore as we experience life. Three, childhood experience of religion is formative, even if as adults, religious observance takes on different forms. I hope you enjoyed this podcast and that if you know someone who would resonate with it, you will take a moment to share it so that we can increase our listenership. Remember to follow if you're on an iPhone and subscribe if you are on an Android device. That will help us to increase our listenership numbers. We know lots of people are listening, but we don't always have them following or subscribing. Thank you for listening to the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day.